everyone, and welcome to the Screen Strong Families podcast, bringing you the best solutions for parents who are serious about finally eliminating screen conflicts in their home. This is Melanie Hempe, and if you are one of our regular listeners, welcome back. If you are a new friend, we are so glad you found us. You are no longer in the dark. So before we get started with our fabulous guest today, I want to just go over a couple things. The first thing is that we continue to get a lot of questions about the best phones for your kids. And I know it's hard out there because they want smartphones and they want all the bells and whistles. And we keep saying, no, no, no. And we will keep saying that. But we will say that there are some phones like the Gab phone that are talk text only that are okay. Now, we like to use Gab just because they are very basic. And what you don't want on your kid's phone is a lot of apps, even if the apps are okay, because what we're trying to do is not get our kid addicted to their phones, regardless if there's the internet or social media or not. They can still get super obsessed with apps on their phone. So the most basic phone is what you want. And so I just wanted to let everybody know that every now and then I go into the Apple store and sometime I go into Verizon and I just talk to the folks there and I want to find out, hey, do you have anything new? Here I come. They don't really know me, but I'm like, I'm the Screen Strong lady and I want to know if you have anything new. And a lot of times when I go in to Verizon, they'll say, no, we don't have any phones that don't have data. Well, I went in just 2 days ago and talked to the gentleman in there and he said, you know, as a matter of fact, we do have a phone now. It's a flip phone. You can go in there and ask him about it, but it's a new flip phone. I don't know if it's that new, but it's a flip phone that is just talk and text. There is no internet. And this is interesting because most of the time when I go in there, they have flip phones, but they are connected to the internet. So he said, no, he said, we've been getting requests from parents that have smartphones for their kids and they're all realizing they cannot lock them down. So this came straight from the salesperson's mouth and I'm just agreeing. My head is just nodding. And he said, yeah, it's really a shame. He said, there are so many kids getting addicted to pornography at the age of 10. And I'm like, I know. And this is why we need to take a deep breath and quit giving our kids the internet in their pocket 24/7. And so it was really cool that we were just in agreement on this because usually they're in there wanting to sell data, data, data. This is what they want to do. But I'm hoping that more phone companies, you know, start to catch on. And he said, no, he said, what I do know is that you cannot lock down a smartphone. And so anyway, that was my little field trip out to the Verizon store. We do also get very many questions about what material do we have for kids and teens? How can I explain this to my 10-year-old? And so, you know, we've got your back. We always have your back over here. So it is coming. And thanks to the help from so many of the experts, like our guest that I'm getting ready to introduce again to you. Just over the years, we have had the best educational resources from so many people, and we have the most incredible kid experience coming for you this summer. We are working on it now. I work on it every single day. It's almost ready. It will be also available. The material will be available in a workbook as well as an online class. So hang tight. We're coming. Help is on the way. And like I said, thanks to so many of the authors and the people that I have met in this space over the years, we are going to have a fabulous product. So I want to introduce our guest today. Tom Kersting has written the book Disconnected. And then he just wrote a new book, Raising Healthy Teenagers. And you remember we've had Tom on before, but I want to welcome Tom to the show.
Hey, Melanie. Thanks for having me.
You know what, Tom? We need to hear a little bit of an update on where you are now and what you're doing in your day-to-day world, because I'm so excited for you to be able to share with our listeners. So give a little bit about your background and what you're doing.
Sure. So I'm a licensed psychotherapist at my private practice up here in New Jersey. And I worked in a public high school for 25 years. I retired 3 years ago early. Did my 25 years. But as far as this space, I'm actually one of the pioneers in this space. And if you know, people who have read Disconnected, I explain it in the beginning of the book. In 2009, March of 2009, Melanie, it was the first lecture I gave on the topic of screen time. It was more of a forewarning towards parents based on what I was seeing as a therapist and school counselor and the fears I had for the future, all of which have come true now. So that book and that led to me writing Disconnected. The second edition came out almost 3 years ago. And now the latest book, Raising Healthy Teenagers, Equipping Your Child to Navigate the Pitfalls and Dangers of Teen Life, just came out in February. So, and it was interesting, not only because I was trying to steer away a little bit, from all the screen time talk, because I didn't want to rewrite the same book. So I took it in a different direction, really highlighting all the different issues that kids are confronted with nowadays. And it was unavoidable. The screen time component was unavoidable. I
know. It like falls into every chapter probably, right?
So. It plays into it. So I continue to lecture all over, I got a lot coming up all over the country in the fall. And that's what I'm most passionate about, is really getting out there and getting, my important message, same thing that you do with all the research we've done, and just help parents feel empowered to take on, big tech in this world we live in.
Yeah. Well, I remember when we first met, I was so excited to find such a like-minded professional, because so many people in this space are still teetering a little bit, like they're not as bold. And I love your bold message. It lines up perfectly with our bold message, and that is to delay through adolescence, that our kids need to be kids. There's so many developmental tasks that have to happen in screens, phones, video game, pornography, all those toxic screens do not aid in that development. And with your background, medically, it's just been fabulous for you to get out and help so many families. So your first book, Disconnected, the original version was probably only about 100 pages. I think it was really little. This one's a little bit bigger, the updated version of Disconnected. This is a wonderful go-to first book for parents out there. If you're listening and you are just beginning this journey, pick this book up. This is a really easy read. Tom, I love the way you write. You write just like you're just sitting there talking to someone in your office. It is so engaging. And I know Dr. Stacy, also one of our physician partners, really recommends this book a lot too. So thank you so much for writing that. And so if you already have Disconnected, then you definitely want to get Raising Healthy Teenagers, because it's a lot more of the same in a sense, but you've developed it a lot deeper. And so we're going to kind of talk about some of that today. And then I have some questions for you that honestly, what I do is just pull in our Facebook account and I just read some questions. And oh my goodness, I want to keep up, with our parents and the things that they are struggling with. And I'm so happy to have you there to help answer some of those questions. So let's just dive into this book. The chapters are the first one is Mental Freedom. And I just love the name of that chapter because we're just all about freedom over here. Everybody talks about screen time and your kids and you have to restrict and limit and be the bad guy. I'm like, no, I'm like waving my flag in the background saying, no, it's not about restrictions. It's about freedom. It's about freeing our kids. And this chapter I'm so glad you started with this. And, your first sentence, when I was a kid, my mom often said to me, I wish you could have grown up in the 60s. Okay. I know we don't want to sound like we want to go back in time, but seriously, I mean, there's so much about it that was really great, right?
So. Yeah. And I tell my kids, it's funny because I tell my own kids, I'm like, man, I wish you guys could have lived in the 1980s. It was the best. So that first chapter, Mental Freedom, when they really, because, we hear all about, the mental health epidemic, all this stuff going on with kids and TikTok, making girls, have body dysmorphia and eating disorder issues and so forth. And one thing that, that's not really talked about as much is the fact that, kids and the book isn't really just for parents of teenagers. It's really right. For kids, middles, even elementary school kids who have elementary school kids. So when you think of, we talk about freedom, right? So the phone, these smartphones, and when we have to talk about a 10-year-old having a smartphone, we have a problem. Houston, we have a problem. A 10-year-old, and that's the average age right now, should not have a smartphone, period, right? All they are, they're a prison cell for their minds, right? So when you look at, some of the statistics I highlight in the chapter, is the fact that, today's younger kids, play is down 70% in recent years. Right. And play is a child's natural habitat. It's where they develop emotional regulation. It's where they develop social skills. And every time a kid goes out and plays outside, it activates something like 3,000 genes in the cortex part of the brain, which is what shapes them socially and so forth. So without our children being in their natural habitat, you know, scraping their knee, having a ball taken away from them, they're not developing the important emotional regulation that is necessary as they advance. And that is developed through human interaction, through play at younger ages, through socialization and so forth. You walk into a cafeteria, and we'll move up to the high school level now, or middle school, there's very little interaction. It's everybody looking at their computers or their phones and so forth. And that's not how we are wired as human beings. When you look at the whole concoction of emotional instability and mental health, this is purely related to it.
Yeah. And in the tips at the end, you have replace screen time with green time. And that is so simple. And yet we say over at Screen Strong all the time, the solutions are so simple. This isn't rocket science. We have to get our kids outside. Nature is one of the best places for your kids to live.
And just physical activity, you know, just physical movement. You know, all the research shows that is like the most important thing for, you know, for avoiding and even treating anxiety and depression, believe it or not, physical exercise. But another thing, you know, while we're talking about that, when I'm giving a lecture to kids, Melanie, right, I have a section that I refer to as, you know, social media self-esteem. And I ask the kids the following question, right? Whatever age they are, it could be elementary school kids, middle school. And when I get to that section of my lecture, I'll grab a kid in the front row and I'll say, who are you? Right. And I already know what the kid's going to say. The kid's going to tell me their name. It's predictable. It happens every time. Oh, and then I'll say, hi, John Smith. Yeah. They go on to the next kid. And then, you know, after asking that question to a few kids and getting the same answer, I ask them to ask me who I am. And they say, well, who are you? And my response is, I'm not Tom Kirsting. That's just the name my parents gave me. Here's who I am. Yeah. I am a caring, loving, spiritual, motivated, determined, great human being. And I share that with them because I explain to them that everybody in this room right now is that as well. But you cannot know who you are if you are never dialed into self because you're always distracted by some phone or some outside influence. So I implore those kids to sit every day for 15 minutes in total silence and to get to know the depth of self. That's where all of the resources are within us, not without us. Not, in other words, not coming from the outside world.
And I think that is the hardest thing in the world. In our culture today, we are all addicted to stimulation. And that quiet is very scary. We don't have the confidence to be quiet.
I know. I mean, I give an example in the book too, where they did like a study at some university where they wanted to see, they had volunteers to agree to sit for 15 minutes in total silence, right? Just to, and their goal was to for them, these people to experience the pure joy of just being present and not being distracted. And it was a big failure because all the people, like, they freaked out over it, and they actually had an option to administer a minor electric shock, and all of them, you know, agreed to, you know, while they're sitting there, the silence was more painful than the shock was. But the good news is, with practice, you know, when individuals practice that, you master that, and you really develop a very, very strong sense of self, a confidence, you know, an ability to regulate emotions, and a very strong, self-esteem. It's the only way it can happen.
Oh yeah. You have to practice, and you have to practice without distractions. Of course, it has to be that whole quiet meditative state that we have to get used to. So the second chapter is, I love the style, social nutrition. Oh my gosh, where did you come up with that?
Yeah, I love it. You know, but again, I go further into, you know, I talk a little bit about COVID, you know, in there, and you know, and the fact that because everybody was locked down, you know, particularly kids, you know, when human beings are sort of in solitary confinement and not interacting with other people, they tend to go a little haywire. And there's evidence by, you know, even people that didn't really have, you know, any form of anxiety and so forth, like college age kids and so forth, but from being locked down, you know, and when everybody was locked down, they were just marinating in bad, scary, frightening content. You know, the world is, we're going to all die of COVID. You know, there's all the crime, everything caught on camera. You know, so that just really, really got into their subconscious minds, you know, combined with the absence of socialization, and really, you know, triggered a major you know, anxiety response, you know, that, that was already a problem before that, but it just escalated it.
So the social nutrition, I love that because it's like, as moms and dads, we're all really concerned about what our kids are eating and if they're getting enough vitamins and enough outside vitamin D and all that. So we have to be concerned about their social nutrition. What is it look, are they just getting junk food socially, so to speak, right? And you talk again about free play in here. And I love that you talk about Stuart Brown. He's one of my favorites with his book, Play. And so if you're listening and you haven't read that book, it is fabulous. It will change the way that you look at childhood and it will change the way that you actually as an adult play. And you'll see how important that is. I want you to talk a little bit about this boredom issue because you just kind of touched on it. Why are we so scared of it? And how important is that in our social diet? Because it sounds the opposite.
Yeah. So, I've always said, for many years now, Melanie, is that boredom is the miracle grow for our mind and emotions. Wow. But it's different, the kind of, when we're talking about sitting in silence, right? That's perceived as being boredom, right? And if you just sit in silence and just let your mind wander, you know, that the subconscious mind, we have like 60,000 thoughts a day. You know, that's, we call that stinking thinking. So sitting in this in the silence is self-directed, right? It's focusing on the breath. It's consciously visualizing everything you're grateful for in the world, right? Consciously visualizing the things that you're aspiring for in the world, right? And it's really it's sort of an art form, you know. And it's not just dissipated, letting the mind wander subconsciously. We're all, you know, the negative programming rests from all of our experiences. It's the total opposite of that.
So. This is really hard for kids and it's really hard for adults. And quite frankly, it's gotten hard for parents over the years as they have their own little distraction machines in their hands with their smartphones. They don't even have to have time, you know, get to have time to even sit at the kitchen table and just think either because we're constantly binged with all this. And I will say that over the years that I've done this work, that I believe that the kids who are frustrated with boredom the most, the ones who complain about it the most are the screen obsessed kids. They don't know how to be bored. And this is one thing I tell parents all the time, and you probably see it in your practice, that the way that you know your child has a problem is if they are complaining about being bored every time they're off their screen. If they can't fill that time, that white space, I call it, you know, time in between life, in between going to school, you know, after dinner, before you do your homework, if they can't fill that, then they need some help. They need to learn how to do that. When COVID hit over here at our house and all the parents were freaking out in our community, they're like, oh my gosh, my child's just going to play video games all day long now because they're going to be so bored and they have to play. In fact, a lot of people jumped on the video game and social media wagon at that point. They just threw the towel in and realized it, that they thought that they had to do that. In our house, we were jumping for joy because the boys have so many things that they like to fill their downtime with that they just saw huge, you know, opportunities to do all the things that they wanted to do. And it was so much fun. And so this concept was so foreign to me that in order to not be bored, you have to play video games. Of course, I grew a gamer here with my oldest son. Everybody knows that I did that. And that's why Screen Strong even exists today. I took that route and I know what it's like when a child fills all their downtime in their potential boredom with video games. It derails them in a terrible way. So this social nutrition chapter, you have some tips. And one of them is to teach your child about boredom and show them that it's the furthest thing from being boring.
It's true.
That was really good.
You talk about that white space, right? So that's like when you think of an iceberg, right? That white space is the rest of the iceberg. Yes. Everything else that, you know, kids and adults perceive as reality, you know, through social media, games, all the stimulation, that's the tip of the iceberg. The rest of the iceberg is that white space, is that silence. That's where all of our resources are, right? So, you know, I always say, happiness, everything, our happiness, our joy, our confidence, so forth, is an inside out thing. It's never an outside in thing. So for a kid, you know, they think that all these likes and streaks and followers is what, you know, makes them happy, but happiness is never from the outside in. It's from the inside
yes.
out.
Yes. And boy, if they can learn that early in life, think how many counselors they won't need.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And another thing, another thing I talk about in that chapter too, is the fact, like what I see just anecdotally as a professional is, more and more children nowadays really lack confidence in communication. So they avoid communicating. They'll avoid going to the teacher for extra help because they're afraid of that and so forth. And the best thing we could do is introduce our kids to strangers. And I don't mean some like person, I mean like
a friend.
I mean like somebody they don't know, and have them, have a dialogue. Because there's not enough of that. There's not enough of that face-to-face interaction, and that's an ability that's developed, that actually creates our emotional intelligence, and it can only be developed from face-to-face interaction. And if it's not utilized, kids feel awkward about it, and they just don't know how to communicate, and they feel nervous about it, and it's just goes against humanity, basically.
It does. Teaching confidence and giving your kids opportunities to develop their confidence should be your number one parenting goal on your list. And I'm not saying that lightly. I think confidence is the most attractive characteristic that you can build in another human being. There's nothing more ooey than a kid who's hiding behind their mother's skirt. They can't make eye contact. They're just very anxious all the time. And I think one way to do that practically is to put them in a little theater somewhere, because you have to really get over yourself to stand in front of an audience and say your lines. So there's a lot of things that we can do in our ebb and flow of our parenting that can build confidence. Sports does this, of course. Anytime when you are out in front of people doing something in a stressful situation, which is good. Stress is good. It's not that stress is always bad. It's not always bad. It's really bad when it's on a screen 24/7, but when it's in real life, it is very good and it builds that confidence. And in this chapter, one of the last tips that you have in here is just what you said, to introduce your children to people they don't know. And I just want to make a comment about that, because I think when I look back on our boys now, they're graduating this month, so they're seniors in high school. And when I look back on the things we really did different from what we did with our oldest, this was one of the biggest things that I decided. And it came with a lot of pain from making a lot of mistakes early with the younger, with older kids. But what we did is we decided that our kids were going to have a lot of adults in their life, that we wanted them to be an adult one day. So we were going to have them hang out with adults. And so the way we did this, we had art teachers, we had violin teachers, we had piano teachers and sports coaches. And those are the people that our kids sort of were mentored by. And I am so happy we did that. They are very comfortable being around adults. In fact, for their graduation party, it's all adults coming. We have all the people that have really spoken into their life and helped them along the way coming. And I'm very excited about that. Just remember that your kids don't need to be raised by other teenagers. They don't need to be raised by peers. They need to be raised by adults. And so you were just reading my brain when you wrote that part. That is so important. And sure, they need to have peers. Peers are super important, but you don't want to depend on peers to shape your child. You want them to be mentored by the adults that you respect and that you respect their values, and you want them to be around those adults.
And better yet, like you just mentioned, right? We don't want our children to be shaped by the peers. We want our children to shape their peers. And that's what leaders do. The one that's the leader, that's been raised the right way, that's confident. It doesn't, I always say a leader, a real good definition of a leader is an individual that does what is right, even when it is not popular. So if all your peers all of a sudden start marijuana and all this stuff, the leader is going to step in and say, and hold them to a higher standard.
Yeah. And they are going to be different. And that's with Screen Strong. That's one of our big values. It's okay to be different, and it's okay to teach your kids to be different. It's okay they don't have a smartphone. It's okay they don't play video games. Will they get made fun of? Sure. Will they feel bad at certain points? Absolutely. But that is not, you do not work on your leadership skills by becoming like everybody else. And so I love that you just brought that up. And when they are hanging around adult coaches, they get way more leadership skills than when they're hanging around each other. Again, they need friends, and I'm not saying they don't, but they do need more adults in their life to speak into their lives. So again, we're not going to be able to go through all the chapters, but the chapter that you have on the fear-filled nation, this really spoke to me because I have been doing a lot of research on the effects of images on our kids' brains. Like, this is something back 30 years ago, we didn't really think about this because they had TV and then we turned it off and we were usually in the room and we usually saw what they saw, right? But now that has all changed. And now if your child has a smartphone, they are seeing things that you don't know that they're seeing. And you may think, oh, well, they're just pictures and moving videos and whatever. It's really no big deal. It's just an image, right? How in the world, Tom, how in the world can that harm a kid? Can you explain that?
So I start the chapter off, chapter 3, Fear-Filled Nation, talking about the movie Jaws, which came out in 1975, right? And I give a really good description of it. Like, so if people listening right now, if they remember, after Jaws came out, I mean, it was a blockbuster hit. There were literally millions of people that would not go in the water because of a 2-hour movie, right? With a robotic shark. So think about how that penetrated their mind. And even 50 years later, the guy you're talking to right now is still apprehensive every time he goes in the water because of Jaws, right?
Oh, yes.
You know, a 2-hour movie. But now you look at the modern era today, every single thing, everybody's got a camera in their pocket. There's a camera on every street corner. And so forth. So every single thing happening in society is caught on camera. And a lot of those things are really bad things, you know, shootings, carjackings, murders, people being pushed in front of subways. And, you know, and what happened, and you just look at it, it seems like everybody is walking around on eggshells nowadays, right? Thinking the world is such a scare. Now, I'm not necessarily sure that the world is that much more worse than it used to be. It's just that we now see everything going on in the world. You know, it's kind of like this, like when I'm giving a lecture sometimes, I'll give an example of, you know, when I was driving my kids to school, I'd see all the, you know, at the end of each street, there'd be an SUV with the mom in the driver's seat and the kid who's either in middle school and sometimes high school in the passenger seat waiting for the bus, even though they live 3 houses down, right? And that's this idea that, oh my God, you know, I don't want my kid getting kidnapped, right? And that's because, you know, what people don't know is that kidnapping is actually at an historical all-time low. It's just that when there is a kidnapping that takes place and wherever it might be in the middle of Alabama, we now know about it because of modern technology. That gets in our mind like Jaws does. And now we have like fear, like, oh my God, my kid's going to get kidnapped. Even though statistically it's like negligible, you know, it's like, it's not likely to happen.
Right. So this idea of how images enter your child's brain through their eye, and it goes, you know, the light is reflected off this image and it goes back to their visual cortex. And then it gets kind of dispersed. That trigger, everything you see triggers something, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like you just said, like the Jaws, that triggered fear and anxiety.
Yeah.
And so this is real. This is not, oh, just they're 10 years old, they can see all this stuff. Who cares, right? I think we know as parents, we know that images matter. So what are we thinking?
Yeah. So let me explain that a little bit too. Like, so a feeling, right? Let's somebody feels anxious, scared, depressed, right? I always say a feeling is really just a symptom of thought. Okay. Now, what is thought? Where do our thoughts even come from? What we think, right? I just mentioned we have 60,000 thoughts a day. 90-something% of them are subconscious. All of the stuff orbiting in that part of our mind comes from somewhere, right? And it comes from our experiences. Where are we all the time? That's getting into our mind, right? And we know where our kids are. They're spending almost all their time on a screen, so their thoughts are being shaped based on what they're experiencing on their screens. And then the symptom of those thoughts are the emotions, fear, anxiety, and so forth. And that's how the subconscious works. The subconscious mind is like the computer hard drive. So whenever we're sitting on our screen, we are actually entranced. We're in a hypnotic trance. And this information bypasses the conscious critical mind and secures itself in the depths of that uncritical subconscious mind. Yeah. So it makes a huge, you know, it matters substantially as to, you know, the reason behind, you know, all of this, you know, emotional fragility and so forth.
So you actually become what you see.
You do. Like I say this, Mel, like if somebody, let's say we were, remember the movie, The Blue Lagoon?
Yeah.
Right. So let's say we were born on a deserted island without any of this exposure to anything. What would we even think? Huh. We wouldn't even know what the word fear means. Right. We would just be, we would be human beings.
Right.
And, you know, and that's, but that's precisely what it is. And that's why I'm a big advocate of the silence, so that instead of our thinking being done for us, we're doing it for ourselves.
And that's what's so hard, because it's uncomfortable and it's a hard skill. And we tend to crave low effort, high reward activities. And this is why we're in this big mess, because we've got all these high reward activities replacing the harder things, the harder things. So this whole science behind images is so fascinating to me. I am like so thrilled that you brought
this up. Let me throw one other thing out there, if I may. So you remember this about a year and a half ago, that story about all these teenage girls developing motor tics.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you heard about this. So all these teenage girls right across the United States, Europe, and some other countries were reporting to their pediatricians because they had developed motor tics like a person with Tourette syndrome has, right? So when all the doctors kind of got together to figure out what the heck was going on, what they discovered was that the commonality with all these girls is that they were watching hours and hours of TikTok videos of people with Tourette syndrome. So think about that, all right? You see how malleable the brain is? Just watching that stuff over and over again now unintentionally made these girls begin to mimic, you know, the tics and symptoms of somebody with Tourette syndrome. Think about that.
Yeah. And they don't even know what they're doing. They're subconscious. They don't even know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really powerful. I just don't think parents understand this. I know for one, I certainly never understood any of this.
Yeah, that's why they got to read this book.
Yes, they do. Absolutely. And so under the chapter on behavior and conduct issues, I love that you pull the dopamine topic in here. And you, I think in there say that you think that screens are fixing the problem, but really it's causing the problem. And we're trying so hard to fix the problem with the thing that's causing the problem. And the reason is because of dopamine. We're all chasing dopamine, right? Dopamine is that feel good chemical. It's, we don't even know we're chasing it. I don't think we even know. I don't think we even know it, but explain to our audience what you know now and what I've also learned from all the research that we have from Anna Lemke and the people that are studying dopamine about the pleasure and pain reward center. Explain that a little bit more and about why parents need to understand this.
Yeah. So the reason why I wrote this chapter to begin with is because I have been seeing in recent years an unprecedented amount of kids, you know, coming to my office with oppositional defiant behavior, 10, 11 year olds and so forth, right? You know, cursing out their parents, throwing putting their fists through the wall and so forth, right? And of course, what does it point to? It points to it whenever the phone is taken away or the video game system is taken away and so forth. So the reason for that is, you know, to your point about dopamine, you know, all of these products, so, you know, the social media apps, the gaming and all that stuff, they are intentionally designed to target the pleasure-seeking part of the brain that produces dopamine. And dopamine is the feel-good chemical, and it's associated with every addiction, whether it's drugs, pornography, gambling, and so forth. So our kids are spending hours and hours and hours a day, right, just getting bombarded with dopamine. Now, through evolution, there's something known as homeostasis, and that's the brain's natural ability to kind of counterbalance so that you don't have too much dopamine and too little. But once the scale is tilted and it's just a total overload of dopamine, once that stimuli is removed, the ensuing result of that, the crash and the withdrawal, manifests itself behaviorally. And additionally, I also think part of that oppositional defiance stuff is a desensitization. So the more you see something over and over again, like a kid constantly watching, you know, bad videos of, you know, violence and so forth, it almost becomes normalized now to an extent where they don't realize that, and they sort of mimic that behavior, you know, just from being exposed to it, they become desensitized and normalized to it.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, you use the word dopamine drip. I love that because it is like a drip. If parents would understand and almost visualize that every time your kid is on a video game and they're on social media, they're on pornography, it's like a IV drip of dopamine. It is way higher than the natural baseline amount of dopamine that they need. There's nothing wrong with dopamine. We need dopamine. We would die without it. but our culture has hyper-stimulated our brains so much to crave this. And that's why we have the problem. And again, I said earlier that if your child doesn't, like if they are fine being bored, if they have a take it or leave it attitude with their video game or their phone, then you're fine. But it's not designed that way. And we have to understand this. We never had to understand this 30 years ago about parents. There was no science that we had to understand when we were raising our kids.
Yeah, there's no money in boredom for the tech industry, unfortunately. There's money in eyeballs 24 hours a day on their products.
That's right. And that's, you know, what we have to understand. And we can vilify the tech companies, and many people do. And I have a little different approach. I'm just like, hey, you know, it's like smoking. I'm not going to go shut down big tobacco. I'm just not going to let my kids smoke. And because the reason why is because it's not going to shut down in time for me to raise my kids, right? It's going to take decades for any change to happen. So they're just doing their job. They're keeping eyeballs on their products. They're advertising, they're making money. And of course, with anything in our culture, you do have to follow the money. You see the path and you pretty much have your answer. So you're exactly right. They are motivated to get this dopamine raised as high as they can to keep our eyeballs on the screens. I remember doing research years ago when I first started doing all this on video games, and I was looking at the companies that did the testing for the beta testing for different games that came out. And they have these centers where they bring kids in, and I don't know if they pay them. I never got into that much of the research, but I do know what happens. They come into the test lab and they have a new game, and they put the new game in front of their kids. And I know this because one of my son's friends actually did this, and they put them in these little rooms and they put the new games in front of them. And they literally mark every time their eyeball shifts off the screen, and they say, huh, we need to fix that. We figure out what it was about that scene that didn't keep them glued. And that's their job to do that. But it's our job to understand that most kids can't handle this. And the other thing, Tom, you have seen from being alive as long as you've been alive, the change from what games used to be with Pac-Man, right? Yeah. To what it is now. So talk about that a second when we're in this dopamine conversation.
Oh yeah, I played. My first video game system was the Atari when I was a little kid. My parents didn't have much money, so they had to buy a used one for all of us for Christmas. And we'd play like Asteroids and Pac-Man. You know, and those are just fun. You know, they're not, yeah. They'll have like, you know, like these newer games have like the token account, like the slot machine effect, like the one-armed bandit effect, right? You know, it's all these rewards, like, you know, like and skins and emotes. And those are like the tokens that create, you know, the addictive nature, and they drag you along, right? So it's like never ending, and you keep going and going and going and going, you know, like, you know, Asteroid, you got shot out, you died, and you started over. You know? Right. So it's just a different beast.
Right. It's very, very different as far as how hooked that, you know, you will be. If you were playing Asteroids and your best friend knocked at the door and had their fishing pole, you probably ran out the door and
you got bored of it after a while. You're like, all right, enough Asteroids. But these things are not designed to, you know, to you never get bored from them. You just keep going and going, and then you can't stop because of that never ending.
Yeah, it's the bottomless, endless bowl is the way Anna says it. And my oldest son has come back and said to me many times when he says, if you want to find out if a kid is addicted to his video game, just if he can play for 20 minutes and then be bored and then leave on his own, then he's probably fine. But if he can't, then he's not fine. And you got a big problem on your hand. And there's so many other things in here that I don't have time to go through in your book. Please, the chapter on body image and the anorexia, you know, in our community alone, just from last year to this year, anorexia has increased over 30%, according to the counselors that I'm talking to. What do you see in your practice? Because this all goes in with what we're talking about, this addiction to images that especially young girls see.
Yeah, you know, I talk about obesity in the chapter, and I go into this body image stuff. And even with boys now, you know, they're seeing more of these, you know, body dysmorphia things taking place. And again, it's where does that come from? It's not like it just popped into their mind. It's because that stuff, if, you know, like with TikTok, for example, I just did a segment yesterday on TV about TikTok and how it's causing girls, you know, young girls to develop eating disorders and body dysmorphia and so forth. And the reason for that is the algorithm, right? So if you were, if any parent right now just went to TikTok and just put something like body image or anorexia, those algorithms within minutes are going to now collect thousands and thousands of videos associated with that. And you're going to start getting bombarded with that kind of content. That's how the algorithms work. Yeah. Right. And then you just become, it's like a fish in the water. You just, it's like hook, line, and sinker. Boom. You keep scrolling through these videos. It gets into your head.
When you think about what kids are searching for, of course, they're curious. They're intrigued. They're going to be putting words in the search bar that will maybe not be exactly what they should be searching for, but they're going to. And it takes them down this whole other pathway. And that's what's so frustrating. And the bottom line is parents, we have no control over this. And it's terrible for their brains. It's shaping their personalities. It's causing them to be sick. And we need to take this very serious. I don't think that we have been taking it serious enough. At Screen Strong, we take it very serious. We are very bold about our solutions and our recommendations around all of it. And time does fly by so fast. You know, not allowing social media for a child through high school is 48 months. We're talking about 48 months. Can your child not do something for 48 months? This is the question. So, Tom, let's pivot a minute here in our last few minutes that we need to wrap up in a few, but I want to get to some questions. So I literally just went into our Facebook group and just hunted around for a second because we have so many thousands of families in here. And one of the questions, because I know that you do this every day, right? You're in your office, you have parents, you have patients, you have kids coming in there every day. So this is from one of our parents. She says, I'm so fearful that my 13-year-old will hate me if I take her phone away. One of my friend's sons won't talk to her anymore since they took his phone away. What would you say to that?
Ooh, I have a good answer to that. And this is something when I was on in the audience about 25 years ago of a person doing a presentation about teenagers, this is what his comment was. He said, if your teenager doesn't hate you, you're doing something wrong.
Love it. Yeah, I think so I said that 3 days ago.
Yeah. And you know, what he means by that is like, you know, if we're constantly just pleasing and giving into our kids and we're really not parenting. So there's got to be moments where they're going to be, you know, and as my dad used to say to us, you know, the kids always say, oh, you don't trust me, blah, 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 blah. And my dad used to say to myself and my siblings when we were younger, my dad's a very spiritual man. And he would say, God didn't give you to me for me to trust you. He gave you to me for you to trust me.
Wow.
You know, so for that parent, you know, you just get, you have to, you know, dig, that's the parent, just parent up. I say parent up. If your kid's going to give you a hard time, parent, just set the rules. Otherwise, you're just, you know, you're essentially just giving into your child and allowing them to, you know, to fall in line and develop follower traits instead of leadership traits. Yeah, they're going to give you a hard time, especially at 13, but that's, nobody said parenting was easy. That's part of the repertoire.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think I've said this before on one of the podcasts, but I think that parents are addicted to dopamine too. And I think our addiction to dopamine is centered around wanting our kids to be happy all the time. And we get dopamine. We get rewarded when our kids are happy all the time. And that's why this is so frustrating, because we have to be willing to live with the pain as well. And I've had four middle school kids. I know what that feels like. You know, when they are mad at you and they do say the most horrible things, and that's just part of it. I think there's also another thing we get in our group all the time, Tom, and I could sit here and read all the emails, but I'm just going to kind of paraphrase it. The other thing that we get is, well, here's one I can just scroll here. It says, from where I sit, he'll be leaving home in 3 or 4 years. He needs to have a way to think through these issues and make decisions for himself. If we just restrict him until he's 18, then he'll be less equipped to handle these issues when we're not around to help him. So, you know, this kid is maybe 15 years old. This idea that we have to give in, because somehow we have to train them how to use this. What would you say to a parent sitting in your office that says, well, he's 13, I need to give him a phone because I got to train him how to use this and be, you know, and how to resist the temptations?
Well, you know what the problem is, Melanie, and you know this as well, is that, you know, because I get asked that question all the time at lectures, you know, how do I basically train my kid how to be responsible?
Yeah. Right?
And the answer is your kid is incapable of being responsible.
Yes.
Just by virtue of his age, right? His brain isn't developed yet. You know, the prefrontal cortex you mentioned, which is, you know, decision making, risky behavior, impulsivity, and so forth. They can't be responsible. So it is our job, if your child has one of these devices, to be responsible for them. And that's having very, very strict parameters, making sure that phone's not in the bedroom with them, making sure that when you drive them to school, that they're not glued to the phone and are instead, you know, conversing with you, the parent. And better yet, like you and I have talked about this in the past, is the longer we can delay it, the better off our children will. It's not like if you have a kid that made it through high school without a phone and they go to college, that they're going to be some awkward person. It's not, that's just fear. No. That's not a reality.
Yeah, you're parenting out of fear. And that is, I'm so glad you brought that up, because they become what they do. So if they didn't have a phone all the way through high school, they're not going to wake up on their 18th birthday, their head pop off their pillow, and all of a sudden they're going to be some, you know, crazy person on their phone. That may be true with some things, but that's one of those twisted truths that we talk about here a lot. I know it's fearful. I know that it feels like that's what's going to happen, but that is not going to happen. For example, my twins both know a lot about drugs and alcohol. We have taught them about drugs and alcohol. They know the facts about drugs and alcohol. They have older siblings that have had to go through different webinars and seminars before you even go into college. You have to take a class on drugs and alcohol. Like, they understand all this, but we do not allow drugs and alcohol in our house. And that's the difference. We're teaching them all about it. The boys know all about TikTok. They know all about the internet. They know all about social media, but they don't have to do it to learn about it.
You know, it's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up, because my son just turned 20 yesterday. He's just finished his sophomore year in college.
Yeah.
Right. And he has never had a sip of alcohol or done any drug. Okay. And I know that, and I'm not being naive. I know that for a fact. And he is the most social person. All of his friends that he grew up with, you know, like a lot of teenagers and stuff, do this stuff, you know, experiment and all that. And so I know everything going on, and he has no interest in that. Right. And his friends, right, they don't look at, they actually admire him. Like, his best friend last year told me, you know, once when they were talking about a party or whatever, I'm like, yeah, you guys drinking? And he's like, Matt wasn't. We wouldn't let Matt drink. We look up to Matt.
We look up to him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is possible. And I think that's our job over here at Screen Strong. We're trying to give parents this on-ramp. We're trying to give them the pathway. We're trying to say, no, your instincts are right on. Don't give a kid something because one day down the road, you're fearful that he might do it. That's not what we do. And like you said a minute ago, I just love what you said. It's every day. You want to take, you know, this one day at a time. You don't want to worry about what he's going to do in 5 years. You want to parent to where he is right now, and he is not responsible, and none of them are. And it's like gravity. You can't make your kid, you know, go against the laws of gravity. It's impossible. Yep. So we still have parents out there that are really having a hard time with this, and it's because their kids are, they feel like their kids are being left out. What do you say if a parent is sitting, they've got their child, and they're saying, look, this is the only way that my child can be social. He already struggles being social. We just moved to this new town, you know, last year. He doesn't have any friends. And this is the only way that he can be social. What do you say to that?
Well, you know, the digital socialization, texting, all that stuff, that doesn't carve out actual social skills. That doesn't make a person more social. You know, actual face-to-face interaction does. So I would say get your kid involved in as many activities as possible outside of the house, whether it's sports, whatever they want to do, where they're actually interacting with other people. And this, the what they define as social, you know, through back and forth, Instagram and TikTok videos and Snapchat, that's antisocial. That's not, you know, that's just attention seeking, fitting in. It's not socialization.
Oh, I love that. Attention seeking, fitting in. Wow. That's okay. Everybody write that down. If you're driving, just pull over and write this down. Attention seeking, fitting in. That's really what they're seeking. This social seems to be such a positive word. And this is why we struggle with it. Cause like, well, shouldn't they be social? Yeah, they should be social. But it's that attention seeking, fitting in. We want them to be comfortable in their own skin without all that. You will have a little bit of work now to do that. And the benefits will be so great down the road. They will get over the hump. They won't be stuck in this phase where they hate you for all this. Trust me. Trust me. I know it seems so hard, right? I'm so empathizing with the parents who have already given in, and that's the problem. You know, if you've got really young kids, just don't do it. Just keep delaying. But if you've already given the smartphone, Tom, they've already gotten a taste of all that. Now you're going to pull it back. It's going to take longer and it's going to be harder, right? There's no way around that. You're reshaping their wants.
And I think that's why what parents are afraid of, because if all of a sudden you tell your kid, all right, you know what, that phone's not allowed in your bedroom at night anymore, right? Or there's no video games allowed during the school week. They know what the reaction is going to be. And it's going to be, it's going to be a monster reaction. And you're going to have to just deal with it and be the parent and not let your kids be the ones in control. And gradually they'll get used to it. You know, they will get used to it.
Yeah. And I think that that we have such a short time with our kids that even trying to just moderate all this stuff, you know how I feel about that. It just doesn't work. I've tried. I know on paper it looks good. And I know that we should be able to, Melanie, they should be able to have an hour on the weekend or 3 hours, whatever. It just doesn't work. I've never really seen it work. Actually, I can honestly say I've never seen it work. These kids always get more. They want more. They crave more. That dopamine, baseline dopamine is just shot, you know, and now they get a taste of it. Now they do. Why would you want to go to baseball when you can play Fortnite all weekend? This is just doesn't even, it changes. So why are we even dabbling in this? And the other thing that we hear a lot is, well, we're going to write a contract and we're just going to write all this down. There's going to be this contract and the kid, you know, is going to have to live within this contract. And I have said for years that if you have an activity that you're trying to negotiate with your kid that requires a contract, that is the first red sign flag that you do not need to do that activity.
Yeah. And one other thing, Melanie, is, you know, all the lectures I do, right? I've never, ever had a parent come up to me and say, you know, the smartest thing I did was get my kid a smartphone. And I've had countless parents come up to me and said, the biggest mistake I ever made was getting my kid a smartphone.
Yeah. Yeah. And if they had to go back, they all say they would do it different.
Yep.
They would delay. Well, let's wrap up. Do you have anything else that you want to share? Is there any other, can you think, I'm putting you on the spot, what is, outside of these things we talked about, one of the number one things that parents come to you about when it comes to screens?
Yeah, I mean, they're usually coming to me for other things, right? Like the anxiety, you know, depression, all this other stuff. And it seems to, and the oppositional defiant behavior. And sometimes from the screens because they know who I am and what I do, but it's really those things are a byproduct of the screen use because they're just dehumanizing, right? You're not a human. You're living on another planet. Your kid is living on not on planet Earth, but on the cyber world. You know, we have this whole mental health epidemic. You know, this increase in suicide, and we know why. And now it's time for and we can't just cross our fingers, roll the dice, and just hope everything is going to work out. We got to take action.
And I bet you just every day, I mean, do you get exhausted over this? Because I know a lot of counselors do.
I never get exhausted ever because I never, like my whole philosophy here, Melanie, is like, I never really believe in a problem. Like people come and they think, oh, problems. Because I'm excited about the solutions. And that's what I help with people. You know, we're not going to sit here and just regurgitate your problems. We're going to come up with like concrete strategies that are going to provide solutions for you.
Can you provide some encouragement for other counselors that are out there? I've never thought of this before, but I think they need encouragement because I think they're exhausted with pounding against this issue and telling parents, take your kids off these screens for 30 days, just give them a break for 30 days and parents can't do it. Can you just encourage some of the counselors that are out there?
Yeah. One thing I try to tell you, I've been doing, you know, the private practice stuff for like 23 years now, I think. And, you know, and again, like I've, and you know, people, I think counselors, therapists tend to focus so much on the problems, right, that people come to their office with. And if you can kind of reframe that and look at it as an opportunity to provide a solution for somebody, right, that's enlightening. If you get too fixated and too hunkered down on regurgitating the problems and, you know, and then taking that into your own being, you know, that's going to impact you. So you got to just leave it where it is and trust the process of offering strategies and solutions for people. And when you see them start to grow, that's very rewarding. And you know, when you're rewarded by something, it's not draining.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. That's really good. And I would say to be bold, just to continue to be bold. I I don't know if I mentioned this on a previous podcast, but I saw something recently and the guy was saying that, you know, you need to be bold in your message. And he said, if there's a bottle of poison sitting on the counter, you don't want to take the poison label off. You don't want to put a label that says, oh, this might make you sick. No, you want to say poison. This is poison. So you've got to be bold with our message. And I think a lot of counselors are worried their patients are not going to like them or something. I think the message is bold. It's hard, but the work, it's always harder before it gets easier with any kind of recovery from anything. So my final question for you is, what encouragement can you offer a parent who is listening right now, who knows they have to do the hard work of detoxing their kids? They're going to get online, get our course. They're going to look at this 30-day detox, and all the science points to this, right? You and I both know that it takes 30 days of abstinence from the addictive activity or substance in order to reset those dopamine receptors in your brain. And so we've got a mom, you know, right now, or dad or grandparent listening right now. And they're like, oh my gosh, I know I need to do this. How am I going to do this? What are you going to say to them? What are you going to offer for encouragement?
Yeah. So here's the encouragement. You ready? So the most important thing for our children's mental health outcomes, all right, you know what it is? It's the relationship they have with their parents. So the good news here is that by you know, doing a 30-day detox, right? Yeah, you're going to take like 50 steps backwards. It's going to be hell on wheels for a few weeks.
Yeah.
But what's going to manifest out of that, and this is important for parents as well, after the 30 days, is that a relationship is founded on actually spending time together, communicating and being with one another. So after those 30 days, you know, your kid, you know, one week after next is going to start improving, right? They're going to, that addiction is going to start to, you know, dissipate a bit. And the bright light at the end of the tunnel is that now you'll have an opportunity to actually have a relationship with your child, the most important thing for their mental health outcomes.
That is fabulous. You're exactly right. And this is what I hear after parents do this detox with their kids. They are shocked and amazed over how much they're talking to their kids now.
Yep.
That's the number one thing that we hear. And that's exactly what you just said. Thank you so much for reminding us of that.
You got it, Melanie. Thanks for having me. Again.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming. And I can't wait for your next book, whenever that is. And we're going to have you on again way before that happens. But you have such a wonderful way of putting everyone at ease, making this sound so simple, and giving us so much courage and confidence and empowerment. Thank you so much for coming. You've helped save a bunch of lives today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Melanie.
And thank everyone for listening. If you have any questions for us, please email team@screenstrong.com and we will get to your questions. And so what's your homework? Your homework is to share this podcast with your friends. The number one thing we can do is to build our community around making these changes. Change is impossible without a community. So if you're feeling desperate, that's why. You cannot do this by yourself. You cannot do this in isolation. Subscribe on our site. Give us your email. We only send things out a couple times a month, but we need your email because we don't know what's happening with social media any given day. Facebook may go away. So we need you to register on our site and get our lifestyle course. And like I said, be on the lookout for the student version of our course. Our Facebook group is Screen Strong Families, so you can check in there. But our forum on our website is where we're going to be spending more time. And that's our Connect group. And it's a free forum on our website. Remember, we've got your back and we are here to help you with your screen conflict. So until next time, stand up for your kids, stand out from the crowd, and stay strong.